Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
The man whose name is on the title of this show gets a well-deserved vacation this week. So we're going to play some of the best interviews we've had on the show the past few months. Best of Week and Sean Carey from the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Get in contact with us anytime. Our email is Steve Jones, one word, Steve Jones, at WKOK.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle at Steve Jones PSU. Steve Jones Show podcast. You can get it for free. Subscribe, and the shows will drop right to your smartphone and tablet after they air on WKOK. Just go to either Google Play, Apple Podcast app, or iTunes and search Steve Jones Show. Play-by-play call of the day. How about this? Going into the All-Star break, the Buccos making some noise.
And the pitch. And a swing and a liner out to center. And then it's going to be over Cade's head.
Here oh, my God.
Polanco.
Oh, my God.
Moran is around third. He's heading home. Here's the relay throw.
Yes,
God.
Joe Block, Pirates Radio Network, KDKA-FM. Yeah, trailing and down to their final out on two occasions. The Pirates got that 7-6 win over the Brewers, gave them their first five-game sweep in the majors in a dozen years. Two men on, two outs in the 10th, and a steady rain turning into a downpour. Josh Bell making solid contact on that pitch from Dan Jennings. Ball got past Lorenzo Cain. Bell said it was just a dead red heater. Got it and got to put a good swing on it. Blown save was the first of the season for Jennings. And Brewers head manager Craig Counsell said we just didn't make pitches. That cost us. Pirates five-game sweep, first in the majors since August of 2006. And that's when the Yankees took five straight from the Boston Red Sox. It's the first five-game sweep for Pittsburgh since 1996. Pirates head into the break, winners of six straight, eight of their last nine, and they're only one game below 500 at 48-49. Of course, the other big news in the Pirates division in the Central over the weekend, the St. Louis Cardinals firing their manager, Mike Matheny. They feel that the team is so far performing underwhelming so far this year as they hit the All-Star break. Well, they're going to be hitting that little golf ball in Carnoustie, Scotland later this week, as the British Open gets going on Thursday. Well, Jordan Spieth, he knew that he would be returning the claret jug to R&A officials today, but he didn't realize he would be part of a ceremony to do so.
It wasn't an enjoyable experience that you guys had me do there, but it's done. So hopefully only out of my possession for a week, which would be ideal, but the traditions of the Open are very special, if you're on the wrong end of that one.
And Spieth says he thinks that he can win again.
My chances this year, I think my game feels good. I needed a break. I was kind of dragging along cut line golf for a while and playing a pretty heavy schedule, and I needed to kind of get away from the game, which I did.
Jordan did get away from the game, but yes, he was able to work on his game as well.
I feel like I'm in a position now with every part of my game. I've kind of attacked the places that really needed some strong work.
So R&A, the tournament organizer, well, they actually have more than one claret jug. The official one has a home in the R&A clubhouse. Another one is given to the winner. and he's able to take it wherever he chooses with the stipulation it is returned on Monday of Open Week. That is today. Spieth, 24, he has not won since hoisting the claret jug with a dramatic back nine charge at Royal Birkdale last July, struggling with various aspects of his game this year, most notably putting. Best finish was third place at the Masters. He shot a final round of 64, but since then Spieth has not cracked the top 20 in any event. He missed the cut at the Memorial and U.S. Open and tied for 42nd at the Travelers Championship. But as part of that downtime, as you just heard Jordan say, he went to Seattle where his sister Ellie performed in a cheerleading competition at the Special Olympics USA Games. And while there, he took the opportunity to visit Chambers Bay, site of the 2015 U.S. Open victory, with his caddy, Michael Greller. 100.9 The Valley is your home for Pittsburgh Steelers football, but Le'Veon Bell, is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Says this live show here on WKOK, mere hours away from the deadline by which the Steelers and Lev Bell would have to come into an agreement on a long-term contract, or else Le'Veon Bell has to play out the season on the franchise tag. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Bell's been angling for a monster deal for over a year now. Talks are expected to come down to the wire, just like they did a year ago. Jason Lockenfora, CBS Sports NFL Insider, reports today talks are still ongoing. They have been amicable and productive. But as Jason Lockenfora notes, that was also the case this time last year. Steelers are making what they believe is every effort to do just that for Bell and remaining willing to pay him more than any running back has made in the league for quite some time. Then again, that's the same mindset they had a year ago when the Pro Bowl backed out just before the deadline and opted not to sign the contract. And that had to have been done by 4 o'clock, actually. In the past, Bell had addressed the ongoing situation publicly, most often through his rap lyrics. And no, I have not downloaded any Le'Veon Bell music. I just don't have enough room in my iCloud for that. Bell wants a deal worth $16-17 million a season. He has not shied away from his intent to set a new benchmark in terms of running back compensation. And best Adrian Peterson's deal with Minnesota from that feels like decades ago, doesn't it? That feels like a long time ago. Bell considering sitting out for as much as half of the season. But practical reality, this will be his final year with the Steelers, you would think. But next Wednesday, 25th, they'll be back in training camp. And of course, you can catch all the Pittsburgh Steelers games again this fall on 100.9 The Valley. But between now and then, in the state of Pennsylvania, are you going to be able to bet on football? Well, we are moving in that direction. And the big news came down back in May, and we covered the first hour of our Best Of show today with sports betting. That's the top conversation. And after that big Supreme Court ruling was released a few months back, we had a chance to talk to Neil Best, the outstanding sports writer for New York Newsday.
You know, when my daughter first went to Vanderbilt in 2013, I explained to her, you know, you're not going to have James Franklin for your whole 4 years. You understand the way this thing works, right? Obviously, I was right. And I had to root against him the first couple of years because he, you know, abandoned my daughter. But I got over it now. It's all good now.
She could adopt him.
Well, that's fine. Her best friend was Penn State, so she got to rub it in a few times. But it's okay. Vandy will muddle along with their, you know, whatever annual 2-6 record in the SEC. So.
I want to talk to you about the sports gambling what the Supreme Court approved this week by parts of it 7-2, most of it 6-3 ruling. Look, if we had this conversation, I don't know, 10 years ago, we'd probably be talking about, well, moral, ethical, whatever. You and I both know that's not the conversation now. It's all about money. So how do you think, at least initially, where do the leagues, what kind of leverage do they have to get their cut out of this?
Well, not much. I mean, first of all, the lawmakers in New Jersey have already made it clear they don't want to hear anything about that because they just spent, 6 years and $8 million fighting these people in court, so they don't want to hear it. You know, New York's going to, thinking about putting in one of those quote-unquote integrity taxes. But, yeah, I mean, realistically, I was talking to the CEO of William Hill U.S., the big bookmaker that's working with Monmouth Park to get theirs open in a couple weeks, and he's like, wait a minute, Mark Cuban just said that this ruling is going to double the value of every pro franchise in American sports. This Tepper guy just paid $2.3 billion for the Panthers. I mean, they're going to get their cut in the form of sponsorships and advertising and increased ratings. And so I don't know that they need a direct cut of the revenue. I mean, I understand why they want to try to get it. That doesn't mean that they should or will. The other thing to keep in mind here is all these states have to be careful to not overtax this stuff because the illegal bookmaking world still exists, and you have to make the legal market attractive enough so that people will do that instead of going, doing the other thing. So, you can't. This is still a competitive world between the legal and the illegal markets, so they got to be a little careful about things like taxes.
In fact, Neil, let's get to that because I'll follow up on that. New Jersey is, 17.5%? All right. Pennsylvania wants to go at 36%. They're acting almost as if they're trying to say we don't want it.
Yeah, no, I was talking to this woman who works for Sport Radar, which is this company that kind of advises foreign and American sports leagues about, avoiding, quote-unquote integrity problems, but also things like what you just described. And she was telling me these tax rates over 30%, I mean, they're just not going to fly because, again, these states are not going to be operating in a vacuum. I mean, people can still do it the old-fashioned way if they want. And then you get, illegal bookmakers can give you credit, they can not charge you taxes, they can, they have to make this thing worth everybody's while.
All right, so that brings me to the federal part of it, because the opening question was about where's the leverage for the leagues. It seems like they'd rather lobby the federal level because maybe they feel that's their best shot at it.
Yeah, no, I think, what they say is that for logistical reasons, it's good to deal with one set of rules rather than 50. And, that I do buy that. I mean, it makes sense.
Yes.
But also, it makes it easier for them in theory to have some kind of system where they get their cut and it's all very organized. So, but they could have said that 5 years ago. I mean, again, New Jersey's attitude is forget that. We've just spent all this time fighting you. We're not just going to give up our right to do this ourselves. And, I think it's going to resemble very much like the situation with marijuana, where each state has its own thing, and in some states it's completely legal, some it's completely legal, and then there's a million rules somewhere in between. So it's not going to be a federal thing like whatever. I mean, I know this is a more important subject, but things like same-sex marriage, which the Supreme Court ruled on and it became the law for the entire country. I mean, in this case, I don't see it going that way, particularly since Congress can't really get anything done about anything, so.
I did mention that the other day. I said, they can't pass a spending bill, and now they're going to do this?
And still, when you talk about the ethical part, although for the most part, that argument has crumbled very quickly, there are still places where, Utah will probably be the last place that ever legalizes gambling. So, states, there are still some regional differences in this. But one thing I find interesting about this topic is that in this political environment, how, sort of nonpartisan this is. This is not, in New Jersey, you have the most conservative and liberal ends of the political spectrum in the legislature and, Chris Christie when he was the governor, and everybody is on board. So it's interesting. And even when you look at the states that are moving toward legalizing it, it's all red and blue, and it's a very nonpartisan issue as far as I can tell.
No, it's a green issue.
Yeah, I don't know exactly.
It's not a red state or a blue state. You're a green state because they want the cash.
No, exactly. Green is more important than red or blue in this case, and I guess in a lot of cases. It's amazing. Given how long this has been going on as kind of the law of the land, the lack of opposition to this, as long as you have safeguards against, misbehavior, and as long as you take care of that percentage of people who develop a gambling problem, although obviously they could, you know, they have places to gamble as now without it being legal. You know, in the grand scheme of things, this does seem to be an issue that, you know, there's no organized opposition to at this point.
Leagues do have, whether it's the PGA Tour or whether it's the NCAA. NCAA just put together a 10-year analytics deal. And the PGA Tour has a deep analytics. All leagues do. And if they have the rights to it, obviously the sports books would like to get their hands on it. That helps them set odds and so forth. Mm-hmm. Is that potentially the leverage for leagues, that they control that part, and that's the part that the books would love to have?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that'd be enough, something that they would think is nice to have, but I don't know if it's something they have to have, because, you know, I mean, let's face it, a lot of these odds, it's like when people think the bookmakers in Vegas are saying who is or is not going to win, when all they're really doing is saying, you know, determining where people think is going to happen, because they want even amounts of money on both sides. So, yeah, I mean, any data is helpful, obviously, and maybe it could be more of a thing where the leagues would sell that as opposed to turning it into a, you know, a percentage of the revenue. But, you know, it does make sense for the leagues to say, wait a minute, you're using our intellectual property to make money. But like I said earlier about the Mark Cubans of the world, the reality, I was talking to an executive, it was up Fronts Week in New York, and I was talking to an executive, a sports TV executive, the night this happened, and he was just like, do you realize how much more valuable all these TV channels, just, you know, ESPN or YES Network here in New York? I mean, all the in England, it's, you know, every other advertisement's for a sports book. Or remember what happened 2 years ago with the daily fantasy ads that were driving us all nuts at the beginning of the NFL season? Well, that's going to happen with all these sports books, although, you know, because it's going to be on a state-by-state basis, I guess a lot of it will have to be local ads. But in any case, everybody's going to make money off of this, except, of course, the people that actually make the bets, who, you know, half of them are going to win and half are going to lose.
In fact, more than half are going to lose.
More than half are going to lose, exactly.
The house does very, very well for some incredible reason, Neil.
I mean, I do think it's going to be the kind of thing where the hardcore gambler is already doing it, so he or she will, I don't know, might do the legal thing. For someone like me, who it's just kind of a fun thing, if you happen to be in Vegas, to say, oh, I'm going to bet $10 on the, you know, the Mets game or something. I mean, that's sort of a harmless fun. It's like, I don't bet illegally, but when I have a chance, I bet legally. So if it's in Atlantic City and I'm there, I'll say, oh, yeah, well, what the heck? You know, let's put, you know, $100 on the Browns to win the Super Bowl just for the fun of it, you know?
I was reading. Okay. I'll have to get back to the wisdom of that.
Well, okay, maybe the Jets? No, not the Jets.
No, okay, we're still not on the right track yet.
Penn State to win the national championship.
All right, now we're getting warmer. Okay, but if in my reading of this, that if you talk to somebody from Ladbrokes, for example, they do very well, and a difference maker for them are the people in England that make those 5-pound to 25-pound bet. That's the difference maker for them. Is that what you think is a realistic possibility in this country?
I do think so, but in order for that to happen, it's going to have to be the kind of thing where either there's a place on every corner, like in England, or more likely, you know, on mobile phone based betting. Once that happens, that will make a difference. In the very early stage of like what New Jersey's talking about, where you have to be physically present.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not going to make a huge difference, really. I mean, how many people are going to schlep to Monmouth Park every time they feel like making a bet? But once you can do it on your phone and you're hanging out with your buddy at a bar and say, hey, let's bet on this, you know, the second half of this, you know, Warriors game or something. Yeah, I think that will change the business and just bring in a lot more money from, people who, I mean, everybody knows you can do it if you really, I mean, again, it's somewhat similar to the marijuana thing where most people are not inclined to illegally seek out drugs. But if you're in Colorado, as I was for a wedding a couple of years ago, and it's sort of the novelty that, oh, this is legal here. You know, you might partake even though it's a one time, you know, you're not going to be a regular.
All right, let's just have just a little fun with this for a moment. A year from now, best guess on your part, what does the landscape look like a year from now?
Well, I mean, it's some of these states, it's going to take the logistics of this and the politics of it are going to take a while. I mean, clearly, New Jersey is going to have gambling by the, you know, within the next couple months, but other states, I'm not completely up to date on what's going on in Pennsylvania, but I mean, let's just take New York, which I know better. I mean, I think within 2 years or so, they'll certainly be betting in casinos and at wherever other designated spots they have. 5 years from now, I think, yeah, we're going to be, I don't think we'll be quite where England is, but 5 years from now, it'll just kind of be a normal part of being a sports fan and nobody will think twice about it.
My guess is in 5 years, just my guess, two-thirds of the states will have this.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But again, you know, it's going to be a kind of a, you know, a two steps forward, one steps back thing. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to work out because every state's got its own political nuances but you know, New Jersey is just chomping at the bit here because they're so mad at everybody for making them spend all this time and money on it that they just want to kind of revel in it and get this thing going. I know Delaware's trying to beat New Jersey, but I don't know. I mean, Monmouth Park, I think, will be ready in a couple of weeks, I guess.
Yeah, it sounds like by Memorial Day, Monmouth Park will be taking wagers, and you know they'll be able to take wagers, for example, in the NBA Finals.
Originally they were shooting for Memorial Day. Now it might be a couple of weeks after that just because they have to go through the process. But, yeah, I wrote the other day, again, things like desegregation of schools and same-sex marriage is obviously more important topics. However, the Supreme Court over history has tended to reflect whatever the cultural vibe is of the country, and obviously they did it for legal reasons, but in to me, the reality is they were also sort of bowing to just cultural reality where the United States is just kind of ready for this now, and they just kind of acknowledge that in a way and say, okay, just do whatever you want.
Yeah, exactly. And what this is, just so everyone understands about the Supreme Court, yeah, you're right. There are so many other really important issues that they ruled on in the past. Well, it turns out that this case was before them, so I had to rule. So they did.
Right, and again, it's very interesting to me. This thing happened less than a week ago, and again, you just don't, not that everybody thinks it's a great idea, however, in terms of a widespread, backlash or anger or concern, I mean, really, there just isn't very much of it. Everybody's just kind of like, okay, whatever, let's go on. Even the NCAA is like, all right, well, now you can have events in states with gambling, whatever, it's fine. And all the pro leagues are like, I was there at when Adam Silver first mentioned this in September of 14. It was before he wrote this op-ed piece in the Times, New York Times, everyone talks about it. In September of 14, he's with the Bloomberg Sports Summit, and I just happened to be there. And he just blurts out in a Q&A, well, sports gambling's inevitable, and, you know, we can benefit from it because it keeps people engaged, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And people who were there are kind of looking at each other like, I can't believe this. The commissioner of the NBA just came out in favor of sports gambling, basically. And, of course, he was right, and here we are 4 years later, and I guess it was inevitable.
Yeah, it sure was. Hey, I really enjoyed this, Neil. Appreciate it very much. You tell your daughter Penn State football's in good hands, all right?
Okay, well, Vandy will try to muddle along, too, I suppose.
I suppose you're right, Neil.
all right, thanks for having me.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855. Or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Steve's got his feet propped up, or he's at the golf course, one of the two, and deserves to do either one. And back with us next Monday. Best of week, Steve Jones Show, WKOK, Sean Carey. We're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai. North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key up on this strip in Hummel's Wharf. And our Monday show is always brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. When life happens, you want to make sure you've got the coverage in place. So when you need the Purdy family to go to bat for you, when you file that claim, they will act quick because those are the people you want in your corner when action needs to be taken. So you take action, make that first step, and go to Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, and they will customize a policy and a plan for you and your family. All right, some breaking news out of Pittsburgh. Well, it's kind of what we expected. Le'Veon Bell did not sign a long-term contract with the Steelers for the second consecutive year. The All-Pro running back will play for the second straight year on the franchise tag. It is a one-year tender worth $14.5 million. Steelers general manager Kevin Colbert in a statement, even though we could not reach a long-term contract agreement with Le'Veon Bell, we're excited that he'll be with the team in 2018. We worked very hard to find common ground, but were unable to accomplish that prior to today's deadline. Le'Veon Bell, about a half an hour ago, went on Twitter and said to all my Steeler fans, "My desire has always been to retire a Steeler. Both sides worked extremely hard today to make that happen. But the NFL is a hard business at times. To the fans that had hope, I'm sorry we let you down, but trust me, 2018 will be my best season to date." Steelers training camp opens up a week from Wednesday. Speaking of Pittsburgh, absolute legend, the godfather of all of Pittsburgh sports radio and television, Stan Saverin, AT&T Sportsnet and ESPN Pittsburgh, joined us back in May.
During the course of any individual's career, there are certain people along the way that you run into that make you better just by being around them. For me, one of them was the privilege of being around Stan Saverin for many years. Stan, welcome. It is great to have you with us back on the show.
Steve, I'm not so sure if you're talking about me or you, because it works both ways. Thank you. It's great to talk to you again.
Yeah, great to talk with you. Since I had hockey on there moments ago, I want to talk about that for a moment. The Penguins win back-to-back Stanley Cups, and they actually win nine consecutive series. In the end, for them in this particular season, what wasn't quite there for them as the season played along and in the playoffs?
I think there are a number of areas, Steve. First of all, let me just say they met a Capitals team that showed more resolve than they ever had in the past. I mean, the mere sight of the Penguins used to sort of make them weak-kneed and jelly-legged. I sense the Capitals, as witnessed by winning two games in Tampa now, are a more resilient, mentally tougher group. Maybe the pressure on them wasn't as great. They weren't going in as favorites. Matt Murray was not nearly as good as the goaltending had been with both he and Fleury the last 2 years. I think the bottom six production really not only was it not as good, it was non-existent. In the Capitals series, really throughout the Flyers series as well, you know, they'd get great contributions from guys like, you know, Bonino and guys like Matt Cullen. They did not get, they got some of it during the regular season, but not nearly what they got in past playoff runs. And I think that they were fatigued. And I know that sounds like an excuse, but I think it's a legitimate reason. There's a legitimate reason why no one has won three Stanley Cups in succession in 35 years. There was a reason that no team had won back-to-back Cups in the salary cap era. And I do think that there is a matter of attrition that comes into play. And I really didn't think it was going to a factor until Game 6 when they got eliminated against the Capitals. For the first time, Steve, I noticed that they were a quarter, a half step slow to the puck. And that was Mike Sullivan's game. It wasn't a matter of straight out speed or that Phil Kessel or Carroll Hagelin could outskate someone from, you know, blue line to blue line. It was just they were a half step quicker to the puck. And that's what gave them, I think, a tremendous advantage. They did not have that. And so I think all those factors came in, and they valiant effort. I mean, if Kuhnhackl's shot in overtime goes in instead of out, which, you know, the last two playoff runs, they got an awful lot of breaks. They didn't get many this time, and that's part of playoff hockey.
In fact, it's interesting you say that, because after they had lost that game, I started the show the next day and said, you know what, I felt like the Penguins played really, really well. I mean, I thought they played really, really hard, yet I felt they still got outplayed 75% of the time.
They did. And I think really if you go back to even last year's playoffs or 2 years ago, you know, there were extended expanses when against, I remember, the Tampa Bay series when they got outplayed badly and still somehow managed to win it in seven. If you'll remember the Stanley Cup Finals, they won the first two games on home ice, but Nashville outplayed them significantly. I mean, at one time they went 21 or 23 minutes without a shot and still managed to win that game. They had tremendous resolve, but I do think that I don't know that Washington is a better team, but I think that they were the better team in that particular series. I think Holtby clearly was a better goaltender than Matt Murray was.
I have to ask you about the Vegas deal, because a year ago today they had no players. When you see something like this, where they're coming in against established teams, I know the expansion draft was very friendly to them, but being very friendly in the expansion draft should mean that you finish eighth going in. What do you think?
Well, I do think that this was, you know, the most favorable method that the NHL has ever used, and I understand why. I think there are a couple factors, and not many people talk about this. The last expansion, I remember distinctly, Steve, that San Jose and Ottawa were just awful. It was a joke when they first came into the league. In fact, I was doing color on Penguins games back then, and they were getting ready to play Ottawa, and I looked it up. Over a three-year period of time, the Ottawa Senators had the worst winning percentage of any sports expansion franchise, all sports, football, baseball, basketball, hockey, taking the first 3 years after their expansion years, and they came into their respective leagues, the Ottawa Senators had the worst winning percentage. They were just awful, and I understand why they didn't want to do that again. It's not competitive. Frankly, it's not fair to the ownership that's paying whatever it is, $800 million, and you get this team that can't compete. I also think that they really got a very good general manager in George McPhee. You know, his work with the Capitals is renowned, and I always felt that Gerard Gallant was a tremendous coach, and I remember saying when Florida fired him, what are you doing? And the thing about him is that he learned a lot of what he knows about defensive hockey from none other than Scotty Bowman, who fairly accomplished guy with the Detroit Red Wings. And it seems to me when you have a team with they have decent talent, but you know it's somewhat limited. You have to play a strong defensive hockey game because you're not going to get a lot of offensive talent. And oh, by the way, not many expansion teams start out with a three-time Stanley Cup goaltender, you know, in net, which kind of helps out your defensive posture as well.
Okay, 40 games in. What's your general impression of the Pirates so far?
I'm surprised, pleasantly. I thought, Steve, that they'd be a little bit better than the doomsayers who said, oh, they'll lose 90. I never thought that for a minute. But I have to admit that here they are, you know, through the quarter pole and, you know, sitting there six games over 500. I did not anticipate that. I don't know whether it's sustainable. I think that the division they're in will probably come to bear. You have to play 18, 19 games against those guys. I mean, the Reds, I mean, they've won six in a row, they're still going to be a bad team. But the Brewers are much better. We all know about the Cubs, and you know the Cardinals are the Cardinals. So I think that ultimately, when they get into division play, although they've done pretty well in division games thus far, that's going to sort of tamp down the record. But if they're if they're anywhere near 500, I know people don't want to hear that, but you know it's going to take them a while to build back up to at least where they hope they can get again. And I think this is a great start. I honestly think, you know, we just had the emotional weekend with Andrew McCutchen here. It was great. I think all parties enjoyed it. It brought back some great memories. But the thing that impressed me is the Pirates were able to, you know, compartmentalize that, and they won 2 out of 3. They've won 5 of their last 6 series. You know, that's how you build a plus 500 record. It's not by winning 8 in a row and then losing 7 in a row. It's by taking series, and they've won 5 of the last 6. As far as its sustainability, I think offensively it is. I think Corey Dickerson is a proven major league hitter. Yep. And the truth of the matter is, over the last 3 years, his numbers are better than Andrew McCutchen's. Mm-hmm. Where I wonder about their ability to sustain this is the starting pitching. It's been in and out, up and down. Jameson Taillon has been inconsistent, the same for Nova. They've gotten some surprises with Trevor Williams, but they're still really searching for that fifth starter. So that, to me, is the key. The starting pitching's got to be better, at least more consistent than it's been.
You and I, of course, both really, really enjoy baseball a lot. When you look at the game now that is so heavily weighed on home runs, strikeouts, and walks, do you like what you're seeing, or would you like to see some changes?
I don't know what changes you would make. You know, these things tend to be cyclical. Listen, the big money's always gone to home run guys. But I don't like to see balls not being put into play. Yeah. I'm not suggesting that we turn Aaron Judge into a singles hitter, but I also think that we don't necessarily have to turn singles hitters into 230 hitters who hit 25 home runs, but, you know, strike out, you know, twice as much as they hit home runs, or three times as much. I mean, the astounding stat to me was that there were, I believe it was the month of April, there were more strikeouts than hits. I mean, you know, I realize that everybody's got their role to play on a baseball team, but I mean, it's just excessive, and I don't think it's terribly entertaining. You know, we all like to see the strikeout pitchers, you know, the big strikeout guys, the Nolan Ryans and Corey Klubers and guys like that. But not everybody should be striking out a batter per inning. I don't think it's good for the game. I don't think it's going to destroy it by any stretch. But if we're just talking about you and I being fans of the game, I like to see balls put in play. I just think it's too much, and I don't think it's a true representation of the game. I think that the metrics are a factor. I think that the shifts are a factor. But then again, I also wonder, if you're not a home run hitter and they put 4 guys on the right side of the diamond, then why in the world, as a left-handed hitter, wouldn't you just poke a single into left? I mean, would you rather try to beat the shift and be macho, or would you rather, you know, get a base hit and get on base and help your team? I realize maybe that's easier said than done, but I think when you see half of a diamond open, I'm going to take that if I have the opportunity, and very few of these guys will.
Absolutely right. So I was at a game at Fenway one time. The Red Sox were playing the Royals, and David Ortiz was up, and of course they shifted. He bunted. Right? And of course, and everybody, of course, loved it because, you know, he bunted, and yeah, even against the shift, he still beat it out, okay?
The problem is that the people who loved it the most were the Royals,
yes,
because they're more than happy to get him on first base rather than have him trotting around. I mean, I get that part. But now they're not just shifting, you know, on the Ted Williamses and David Ortiz of the world. You know, they're shifting on the 220 hitters, too, because the metrics allow them to do that. I think everything in sports is cyclical, Steve, and I think that it'll come back around the other way. Once, you know, guys start, you know, lining balls into left center or through the shortstop hole, you know, those metrics will change once again. You know, to draw an analogy, I think the same thing is in progress in the NFL. I remember talking about this a couple of years ago, the year where no running backs were taken in the first round of the NFL draft. Part of that was because Trent Richardson was such a bust coming out of Alabama when Cleveland drafted him. But I also think, you know, it's a passing league. It still is. But I think the guy who changed all that was Le'Veon Bell, because all of a sudden you could see a different value quotient in your running back. And now what do we see? Ezekiel Elliott, Leonard Fournette, of course Saquon, who's, you know, unique in that regard, but we're seeing a lot more running backs because defense in the NFL, it's all sub-package football. It's nickel and dime. Well, guess what? It takes a big guy off the field, and it takes at least one middle linebacker off the field. You're ripe to get run on. So I think you're going to see, my point is, the cycle will come around the other way.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. I just want to ask you, what did you think of the Steelers draft when it was all said and done?
I always look at drafts as to, I have no idea if they filled their needs. The only thing I can ask is, did they address them? They appeared to address some of them, but I have to tell you, I'm torn between what everyone knew the obvious needs were, but also not having the availability to view their board. I mean, I have to take them at their word. They clearly did not think that there was an inside linebacker worthy of the 28th pick, so they took the hybrid in Terrell Edmonds, and there wasn't anybody of value in the third round. The second round pick is understandable because they traded Martavis Bryant, and they wanted to get a wide receiver in here, and frankly, they wanted to get rid of Martavis Bryant before he got rid of them, if you know what I mean. So James Washington, you know, he'll be Juju, and Juju will be Martavis, and that's all well and good. They still need help defensively. I mean, you cannot tell me with any degree of certainty that this defense is better now than it was 6 months ago when they lost to Jacksonville. But that having been said, there, you know, I also think that when we think of safeties, we think of the traditional safety, Marcus Allen being one that they plan to use in that role. But safeties are changing. Again, sub-package football. They signed Morgan Burnett from Green Bay, who is sort of a hybrid kind of guy who can play inside. You know, there aren't many Troy Polamalu's out there. There aren't many Ed Reed's out there. So their answer to not drafting an inside linebacker is that these guys, to a degree, will fill that role substantially.
Stan, always an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for your time, my friend. It's always great talking with you.
Steve, thank you so much for asking. I'm always available whenever you want me or need me. I'm there, and I really appreciate your kind words. Ditto, coming right back at you, and we'll do it again soon.
Thanks so much, Stan. Legitimately, I mean the great Stan Saverin. And I can't begin to tell you, when you're in this business, you know, you're at a young age. All right, so here I am sitting at, I started on the Penn State Basketball Network. I filled in when I was 23, okay? Then I got then the full-time spot when I was 24. And then I was put on the Football Network as the third guy at 25. Now, you're young at this point. And you sit down, and what Nelson Goldberg did, who TCS had the rights, he decided to do a roundtable for a pregame show with Joe. And Joe would sit down for 45, 50 minutes with us, and we'd do this roundtable. And so I'm sitting there as the, quote, junior partner of all this. And these are the people I have in the room with me. Of course, obviously Joe, right? But I've got Gil Santos, just passed away. And you heard me talk wax poetic about Gil 3-4 weeks ago when he passed. John Grant, George Paterno, Stan Saverin. Now, I'm sitting there at this age. I'm looking around. I'm seeing these great professionals around me. And look, I kept a low profile, you know, unless spoken to, because I, out of great respect, and all of them, and Stan is certainly among them, treated me so well. I mean, I'm talking, it was, it just treated me so well. I mean, they treated me like, look, this is going to sound ridiculous, but like equals. Well, I'm, at that stage of my career, I'm not equal to what they're doing. I haven't done what they've done at that point. Yet they didn't treat me that way. And Stan was a person I had sat there, listened to, learned from, great interviewer, knew how to ask a question, you know. And I listened to a guy like that and talking with him. Obviously, you can tell the great respect I have for him. I think Stan's pretty special. All right. We will come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.